Welcome to the Attractions Podcast. You are all clear for dispatch. Have fun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 34 of the Attractions Podcast. I'm Banks.
And I'm Brittany.
And we're here to give you the rundown of all the latest happenings from attractionsmagazine.com over the past week and in our lives in general. And guys, we got a full show to get to today. So we're going to really jump right in. But real quick, how has your week been, Brittany?
It's been a hard week. I'm hitting a wall again. I got over my first quarantine wall, and now I'm starting to hit the second one. But other than that, things are good.
Yeah. And also, happy Mother's Day to everyone out there. We're recording this on Sunday. Of course, our YouTube live stream. You can always join us every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So it is Mother's Day while we're recording this. So big old happy Mother's Day. Sydney, I got to help her sleep in until about 2 or 3 o'clock. Once I'm done here, we're going to help finish cleaning the house. And so, you know, just a very chill, laid back Mother's Day.
You kind of need one of those right about now, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
Well deserved.
Agreed. So yeah, like I said, we got a lot of news to talk about. So let's just jump right into the news in the queue.
All right, first things first. MegaCon Orlando canceled, but there's a but there. There's a new event, exclusive event, coming Halloween weekend called MegaCon Orlando Limited Edition.
Ooh, tell me about this.
So it will take place on October 30th through November 1st, so literally Halloween weekend. Block off your calendars. This is what you're doing at the Orange County Convention Center in Orlando. And to keep it exclusive and safe for guests, it will be limited to 25,000 tickets. And once they're gone, they're gone. And I know 25,000 sounds like a lot, but when you think about like the whole show floor of the Orange County Convention Center, they're going to be so spread out.
And I think I saw in the details of the announcement is that those who have tickets already bought for the regular MegaCon, their tickets will be able to transfer over to the limited edition MegaCon, which means that anyone who doesn't have a ticket, that window is now very much smaller to get in before it sells out.
Yeah. So the way that tickets work is if you have like adult admission, it's automatically transferred over to the limited edition event. If you purchased a Thursday ticket to MegaCon Orlando standard, you get an upgrade to a Friday ticket for the limited edition event. If you bought a youth ticket, you get a complimentary upgrade to an adult ticket, and so on and so forth. And you can request a refund up until May 31st if some reason you can't go or if that impedes on your Halloween plans. So, that's a thing.
And this is the second time this year they've rescheduled because the MegaCon was originally supposed to be in March. Then they got rescheduled to, I think, the end of this month. And now it's rescheduled again, but made smaller. So you'll be curious to see which guests are going to come back and be a part of this Halloween version.
Yeah, they said that they are working on the new lineup for guests and that they hope to have it announced by August 1st. So if you're interested, hang tight. You should get an announcement by then. Hopefully the people who were scheduled to come can work out this new date.
Well, here's hoping.
All right, next up. Taika Waititi is directing a Star Wars movie.
Oh! We willed this into existence because last week I mentioned that I had heard Taika was directing, but it wasn't confirmed. And then literally before we posted the episode, they on May the 4th announced it.
Yeah. And oh man, it felt like every single manifestation I put out into the universe just kind of appeared. And it was amazing. It was, oh man, it felt so good to finally have the rumors confirmed. And he's co-writing with one of the screenwriters of 1917 and Leslie Headland, who did Russian Doll on Netflix, if you guys watch that, is working on a new series. We don't know anything about it. Most people think it's like an Ahsoka series or something, but very excited. I don't know when it'll come out.
It's Taika. Taika doing Star Wars. I loved his season finale episode of Mandalorian. So if that's what we're going to get, like, but, you know, feature length, I'm all for this.
I think it's so funny. A long time ago, he tweeted about how he would get fired within the first day if he worked on a Star Wars movie, and now he's doing a Star Wars movie.
Well, I think the good thing is that it's a new Star Wars movie. It's presumably going to be a new story. It has nothing to do with the Skywalker saga. That's done. So no one's really is going to have any preconceived notions going in to then hate him if he screws something up. It's fresh. So that's really in his favor, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just so excited to have, I mean, if you've been watching Disney Gallery, you've seen the whole director roundtables and everything and them talking with Dave Filoni and everything. I feel like this core group of directors that they've got under their belt now over at Lucasfilm, they really know what they're doing and have a good grip on things. I'm so excited to see where they take the franchise from here.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, next up, SeaWorld, if you got an annual pass, they have started doing things for yes. you. So this is kind of complicated, so I'm going to go over the gist of it. So while the parks are closed, they announced that they will automatically extend all active annual passes and membership products for SeaWorld, Busch Gardens, and Aquatica for a period at least as long as the temporary closure. So if the parks are closed for like 3 or 4 months, by the time all of this ends and we go back to normal, your annual pass will be extended 3 to 4 months. But for those who haven't completed their initial term of their easy pay, so like your monthly payment contract before the parks closed, and you deferred your payments, you will not get an extension. If you continue to pay on your annual pass while the parks were closed, you will get the extension. And if you paid your pass in full, you will get the extension.
Yeah, we do the monthly payment, and it's still been charging us, which was always kind of because, you know, Disney Universal, they said, hey, we're going to put a hold on monthly charges. SeaWorld never did, so it always felt like, really, SeaWorld? Like, you're going to do this to people and continue charging? But at least now they've come out and said, okay, well, here's the reason why. Here's what you're going to get because we're continuing charging you. Yep. I already have the Platinum Pass, so I'm excited. I'm interested to see what new perks I'll get because I can't go any higher. I can't upgrade my tier because I'm at the highest tier. But I think Sydney, my wife, and my daughter Spencer are a lower tier, so they'll get to go up as probably join me as well. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, that's another thing. If you have like a lower tier, they will automatically bump your AP up one tier, and you will also get extra bring a friend days where you can bring in a friend of yours to the park for free, which is great. Cool. If that applies to you, head to attractionsmagazine.com, search SeaWorld. We have the phone number and the email that you have to contact to get everything figured out if you have any questions.
There you go.
All right. Some news we're kind of waiting on. Universal Orlando City Walk might be planning to reopen tomorrow.
Might be. Notes, because tomorrow, if you're watching our live stream, it's tomorrow. But if you're listening to the audio version, it is today. We will probably find out. So just follow our social medias. Go to attractionmagazine.com. If it ends up happening, you'll know about it. But right now, as of this recording, we're not sure.
Yes. So some locations told their team members and their employees to prepare to return to work on Monday, May 11th, which is today if you're listening to the audio, tomorrow if you're watching the video. Mm-hmm. This is not all locations. Universal has not announced this officially. So we are just waiting for the 11th to come around and for stuff to open or not. But it's possible. I mean, we'll get to it later, but Disney Springs has announced a reopening date. Shanghai Disneyland literally just opened right before we started recording this podcast. Things are starting to somewhat go back to normal, I guess, but that's something to keep an eye on.
And here's my takeaway from this. I don't think they're going to just open tomorrow to the public without a formal announcement a little ahead of time. What I think this might be is these people might be told, yes, prepare to return to work and report to work on the 11th so that they can go through a week of training to figure out how they can successfully and safely run their restaurants, stores, etc., and keep social distancing so that then, say, a week of training, then they can open to the public around the day that Disney Springs opens. Because I think I've heard that some of the Disney Springs cast members from third-party stores that will open on the 20th are already there working and training and setting things up. So that might be what's going on with Universal.
Yep. We will update our article accordingly once we find out for sure. But it's something we're keeping an eye on right now. So
yeah. And it's if anyone, we'll talk about it in a little bit. So go on to the next story.
All right. Speaking of stuff opening, Shanghai Disneyland is now open. It's already May 11th over there. I was scheduled to reopen on May 11th with phased openings and phased offerings. So here's the basic gist of what they're doing. The park will utilize new safety measures and procedures like opening with limited attendance, required advance ticketing and reservations, including for people who have annual passes, accommodating social distancing in queues, restaurants, ride vehicles, and other park facilities, increased frequency of sanitation and disinfection. Guests and cast will have to wear masks. Guests will have to scan health QR codes on their phones and present this before they enter the park. They'll have to show their government ID when they scan their tickets, and they will have to wear their masks all day except for when they're eating. Basically that whole thing. We watched a video before we started recording this, and the basic measure of distance that they're keeping between people in queues and on rides is 1 meter, which is just over 3 feet.
Yeah, so less than the recommended 6 feet. But I'm wondering if that's a difference in countries. Like, of course, the CDC in America is saying 6 feet. I'm not sure if other countries also have 6 feet or the meter equivalents, or if China has said, yeah, just 1 meter. It could be different for each country. I'm not entirely sure.
The World Health Organization, I'm just seeing if, World Health Organization says at least 1 meter, so...
There you go. So the WHO establishes 1 meter, but I think the CDC has bumped it up to six feet. So, you know, each country's going to do what they want to do. So they're at least China, they're still doing the safe measurements as according to the World Health Organization. So that's great. It's definitely weird because there's so much signage on the ground now and so many taped squares that you can see throughout the park to differentiate how far people need to stand apart for like outdoor theater shows when you're standing in line. It's very different, but it's still kind of cool to see people in the parks again. And you know, as we're recording this right now, literally 45 minutes ago, Shanghai just opened, and I was watching some live streams before we started recording of people in the park and starting to enter the park and the characters coming out in front of the train station and the band is playing. And it's just like, who knew how much I actually missed seeing these kind of visuals and things.
They played Fantasmic, which made me so happy.
I missed that. I heard them playing Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Oh, I tuned in and they were playing Fantasmic and I was just like rocking out on my couch.
Oh, I would have cried that.
We talked about this not on the podcast, but like last week, I think, with the stickers on the ground, because we were like, well, I would want to stand on the stickers. They did research with guests as to like whether they would prefer to stand in between floor markings or on them. And their research showed that they would rather be told not where to not stand versus where to stand.
That's interesting. I can definitely see it now because the sign of where to not stand, it's a giant like circle with the line through it. Like it's hard to miss. So this is a knock on Americans, I guess, but it also is like, I love you guys. I am an American, but we're not the best at like visual, like reading things. So like, of course everyone in China, Japan, they're really good about following rules. You see it all the time, even before all this happened. Like, you don't see people with kids on the shoulders holding iPads up. They're always very respective. Respecting other people around them. So I can wholeheartedly see them understanding these signs wholeheartedly. Americans, I'm sorry. Like, I probably would want to stand on the thing as well, just out of my visual.
And we could see that there. I mean, they said that they were going to train U.S.-based cast before we reopened and everything. Mm-hmm. So their research might say, well, Americans would prefer to be told where to stand versus where not to stand.
Right.
So it may be the opposite for us. But
yeah.
Yep.
But it's nice to finally see a park, a Disney park, reopened again. Very limited capabilities, but still people are there now. So this will be a great way for Disney to kind of see how things go and then possibly implement various similarities in the other parks around the world.
Speaking of various protocols to implement, leads right into our next thing. So the chief medical officer for the Disney Parks, Dr. Pamela Heimel, posted a letter on the Disney Parks blog last week, kind of going over some possible protocols and rules they are thinking about and considering for the domestic parks, so Disneyland and Walt Disney World. And here are a few of them. So there's phased reopening, which means like gradual reopening of maybe Downtown Disney and Disney Springs before the actual Disney parks, or the hotels and Disney Springs before the parks itself. Physical distancing and capacity measures. So this means like implementing lower caps on guest capacity for certain parks. Like Magic Kingdom, I don't think it has an official capacity, but I feel like they ballpark it at around 90,000.
I think so.
So they would probably aim for like 25% of that to start, and then go up as like things become safer, or depending on cases that come out of people traveling to the parks. Technological support is also being considered, like the Disney Parks app, Play Disney Parks, and virtual queuing for select attractions at Disneyland and Walt Disney World. Cleanliness and sanitation. So the parks are planning increased cleaning and disinfection, deciding when and where that should take place, like in high traffic areas. Like you can't clean trash cans when the 3 o'clock parade, not that they're probably going to have parades, but like, for example, that crowd going through there, there's no way you're going to be able to clean during that time. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to decide when is the safest and most efficient time to do that kind of cleaning, and what cleaning products and processes will be used, because a lot of cleaning products are like alcohol based, and the paint and the scenic fabrication stuff probably doesn't mix well with alcohol-based cleaning products. So they have to figure out what is both safe for guests to use and will help preserve the longevity of the park, because you could peel paint off with alcohol-based cleaning products. So
a lot of things to learn. That is for sure. First off, can I just say I had no idea that Disney Parks had a chief medical.
I didn't. I mean, in this situation, I'm really glad that they do.
Yeah, of course. But that was just a surprise to see that and learn someone new within the company. I do appreciate that. But you know, this is going to be something that we're going to dealing with at least to the end of the year. We're going to have to learn these new procedures and respect them and get used to them, because it's not just going to be something where we do it for a week and then we go back to normal. This is going to be the new normal basically for a while. It's interesting. It's freaky, but at the same time, like I hate using this word, because it is, you know, this is a very deadly virus, and you know, lots of people have passed away, sadly. But it's interesting to me just to see these new changes and how things are going to be implemented, and just learning new things about the park going experience.
Yeah, and they're going to be doing so much to try to make this experience as safe as possible. They're going to be retraining cast, giving them masks to wear, encouraging guests to wear masks. They call them face coverings, which I think is interesting, because mask is like a scary word.
Right.
But I mean, it's great that they're allowing cast members to have that kind of PPE, protective, personal protective equipment, if you don't know what PPE means, to keep themselves and guests safe, because we've discussed this. We weren't sure if they would let cast wear those masks or not.
Right.
So these are just things that you can keep in mind if you're planning to go to the parks, if you're local. If you're not local, I would recommend that you wait.
Yeah.
But this isn't set in stone. This isn't exactly what they're doing, but it's stuff they're considering.
I guarantee you we're going to see stores and carts selling themed face coverings. So they're already starting to sell them on Shop Disney, but we'll probably see them in person at the parks for people who, you know, may have forgotten a mask, or their mask got torn walking into the park and they need to buy a new one. They're going to have masks available in person.
And I thought about this the other day. Normally the recommendation for a face covering is you use it once, and then once you're finished with it, you take it off and you wash it. So that's probably why they have four in each pack on Shop Disney. So people are going to need more than one, because if you wear it to the parks and it's like 90 degrees out, you're going to be sweating, coughing.
This summer is going to be interesting in Florida. That's for sure.
Brutal. And that mask is going to be smelly, and you're going to need to wash it and have a spare on hand. So,
and I'm even thinking, like, when it rains, because it's Florida, it's going to rain every day in the summertime. Yep. How, when it gets wet, like, it's going to be harder to breathe through it when it's full of water. And, like, I don't know.
Yeah. So I think if you've got a mask, maybe bring like one extra one in your bag just in case, like put it in a Ziploc bag, make sure it's clean and everything. Just in case.
Yeah. And hey, we're going to need these masks sooner than we think, because next week there's going to be an opening in Florida.
Yep. Disney Springs is set to begin its phased reopening on Wednesday, May the 20th. This was announced this past week, and everyone's freaking out because this kind of means that Disney World could open soonish, probably not within the next month.
I don't expect the theme parks to open up soon. Shanghai, if I'm not mistaken, I think Shanghai was the first park to close.
I think it closed in January.
Yeah, it closed in January. So now it's the first park to reopen. So they're probably, like we said this before, they're looking to see what happens in Shanghai before they decide they're going to open any theme parks in America. But of course, Downtown Disney, Disney Springs, they're not really parks. They're just basically glorified shopping malls, per se. So it does kind of make sense that they choose to open that first and see how it goes from there.
Yeah. And for now it's just the third party shops. So, I'm trying to think of, Stance, socks, probably Uniqlo, pretty much anything except for World of Disney, the Marketplace Co-op, that kind of thing.
Exactly. It'll be interesting, 'cause yeah, you have to wear masks. They're required to even go there. And you know, it's a whole political thing, and I don't want to get into the politics of it all, but especially here in Florida, there are a large group of people that are very anti-mask wearing. So I can only imagine what's going to happen when, you know, they show up to Disney Springs and then they're told they can't enter without a mask on. There might be some issues with some of the general population, and that makes me concerned a little bit. But I mean, at the same time, you know, Florida is in a phase one reopening right now. So there are certain stores and things that can, and restaurants that can open dine in with limited capacity. So Disney Springs is obviously going to allow their third parties to make the decision to if they want to reopen or not. But there's no reason to go if you don't have to go. Don't go just to walk around and see what it feels like. No, bad idea. Let it just be for the people that need to go there either for work, or they have to, if they need to go pick something up for someone, or they've ordered something. Don't just go and hang out. That's stupid. I do not condone that.
Yeah, we just want you to be safe and to keep others safe, because it's not just about us. It's about everyone within our general bubble that we have to think about now. But if you are planning on going to Disney Springs when it reopens, here are some of the protocols and things that they are preparing for you. Yes. So they're utilizing enhanced safety measures and cleaning procedures. They will encourage appropriate physical distancing. I don't know if they will go with the 1 meter or the 6 feet thing. We'll have to see. Requiring both cast and guests to wear face covering. So everyone you will encounter, hopefully, they don't let any people sneak through, wear masks, and additional safety training for cast members with a focus on limited contact guest services. So probably contactless payment, handing of goods with gloves on, that kind of thing, not following you around the store, checking to see if you need help necessarily, stocking things, I would assume, with proper PPE like gloves and stuff, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's full disclosure. I guarantee you someone from our team will probably be there on the 20th, because we are, as much as, you know, we do vlogging and we do videos and things like that. We are a news site. That's what Attraction Magazine started in 2007 as a news publication. So we do still cover the news. So someone from our team will be there on the 20th to share how things look, the procedures that are happening, the, you know, what's being done. So you'll see stuff on our social media channels and our YouTube channel from May 20th. From Disney Springs. I don't know if it's going to be me personally. It might be Theron that goes out. I'm not sure who's going to go out, but one of us will be going out on the 20th to give you guys a look at how the openings are being handled by Disney and report the news to you. And we're obviously going to do it as safely as humanly possible, respecting right. all the distancing and all the rules as well.
Right, because it is our job, but we are people too, and we are trying to keep each other and ourselves safe. Mm-hmm. And that is the first priority above everything.
Exactly.
Disney Springs also said that they will that they could announce additional protocols and procedures closer to the opening date. So if they do, stay tuned because we will update you if that's the case.
Exactly.
And other than the Animal Crossing corner, we just got through the news in half an hour.
Boom. Virtual high five. Boom. Nice. Yeah, sorry to breeze through that, but you know it's just kind of it's almost the same old in terms of like what we're talking about with the thing reopenings and procedures and things like that. But hopefully, we'll have more to talk about in variety of things in future episodes. Someone in our live chat says that they miss Brittany.
I'm here every Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
catching up in the chat here. Hello, Rodney. Good to see you. No worries for being late. Exhibition Theme Park. Hello to you.
Hi.
Brian, real quick. What if Taika is doing a Knights of the Old Republic film?
Okay, listen. Before they got fired, I think David and Dan from Game of Thrones were working on a KOTOR movie. And then they got fired because they rushed Game of Thrones so they could start working on Star Wars. And then Game of Thrones ended up being really bad. So Kathy fired them.
Oops.
That's what I think happened.
See, kids, don't rush your projects.
No, it's important. Kathy Kennedy might be watching.
Exactly. Oh, God. I don't want to. She's always watching. Yes, Brittany, she has heard your thoughts on Rise of Skywalker.
Listen, no disrespect to her. I admire her a lot, and she's one of my female heroes. But God, that movie was awful.
Oh, all right, before we get into that, we got some Animal Crossing to talk about. Our Animal Crossing corner, our new weekly segment here, and a lot has happened on the island of Golden Oak. So I'm finally trying to put a uniformity to my island, and I've got an area where you can swap some items if you don't have any. There's a playground right next to it. I've got pathways, I've got bridges, I've got a Zen garden that I finished building. The neighborhood is complete, so I'm moving some stores around to their final locations. So it's happening on my island this week.
That's awesome. My island, I don't know. I've never been able to like fully renovate a whole island. I played like Wild World was my first Animal Crossing game, and that was like where you worked with the natural layout of the island and the town and everything. So I'm trying. It's just hard because I get super overwhelmed really quickly because I think about the whole island, like the big picture of the thing, like how I want to design everything, and then I'm like, oh God, it's so much. I'm overwhelmed. But I'm trying to redo my entire campsite. I have a little picnic area. I'm going to move my tent and put like a bonfire and some log seating over there. I designed my secret beach where Red comes, who hasn't visited me all week, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't seen him at all since last week.
I finally unlocked this week him, me letting going into his boat and buying art.
Yeah, he didn't show up. I didn't see. Well, I saw Celeste last Saturday, I think, but I haven't seen her since. And I saw Leaf twice this week, which I thought was weird, because I thought each NPC would come weekly.
Right.
But
and I've been playing this for over 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks now. I still have yet to see the guy, the bug guy.
Oh, Flick?
Yeah, I've never seen him.
I've been holding on to so many bugs and fish waiting for Flick and CJ to come so I can sell them because I caught 2 coelacanths in one day and they've just been sitting in my front yard waiting for them to show up so I can sell them.
Let me tell you, so Sydney and I started a few days before Sydney started, and Sydney literally just about 45 minutes ago has declared that her island is finally at 5 stars.
Shut up.
I'm still sitting at 3.
Finally, as if she's only been playing for like a couple weeks.
She is killing it on her island, and hopefully maybe sometime in the future some of you guys will be to visit Buena Vista. That's her island. So that's cool. But a really cool thing happened on my island this week, and Brittany for the first time visited my island because I was shocked to see one day that the Nook kids were buying turnips for 516 bells a turnip.
Unreal.
Which if you don't know turnips, so turnips is a kind of a they call it a stock market in Animal Crossing. So every Sunday, there's this lady that's in there from the morning from 5 a.m. to noon. You can buy turnips from her at a varying price between like 90 and 110 turnips, 90 to 110 bells per turnip. So you buy as many as you want with however much money you have. And then you can turn those around whenever the Nook Brothers are buying them at various prices. The prices change twice a day, so you could get as low as 40 bells or as high as up to 1,000, I think. So my island randomly had 516, and so I invited a lot of friends over to make some bank.
And you really helped me because at Banks and I, we kind of – coordinate selling our turnips together. So if one of us finds like really good link, we send it to the other one. And I went to this streamer that I usually go to sell my turnips on her island, and it ended up not working out, and I was super angry. So mad, because I like waited hours in line and got skipped. So and Banks was like, hey, my island has like 500 and some buying price today. So I was like, I'm there. And he really saved me because that week I bought 8,000 turnips for 360,000 bells.
Mm-hmm.
And I made like 4 million, boom. 4.5 million after selling them all off.
Nice. This week, this morning, I bought 5,000 turnips and they were at 91 bells.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's really good. So So. It's 5,000 per level of my house. I have 10,000 bells. 5,000 are right now stored in my basement, and 5,000 are stored in my top room. So I have 10,000 bells, and I'm looking forward to hopefully finding a good price this week.
10,000 turnips?
10,000 turnips. Yes, thank you.
So it's like, you don't put your money in the ATM?
No, I have. I don't trust the banks.
Keep it under your mattress.
you can't trust that Nook, I swear. Yeah, 10,000 turnips. That's my this week is 10,000 turnips.
That's more than I've ever done. You're getting brave. I actually took a week off last week. I really didn't like how angry I got over it because I was like, this is a game. No, I was pissed. No,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
I was,
no, it's
I was so mad because I was like, I've never been treated this way. They assumed I was lying about waiting in line. So I was like, I'm gonna take a break. I'm not going to buy turnips this week. I'm just going to chill because I have 12 million bells in the bank. I'm good. I don't need to buy more turnips. But so it was nice to kind of not get up early and get on Animal Crossing because I'm also I'm like juggling games at this point. I finished The Last of Us. I bought it last week and finished it in 3 days. Nice. Awesome game. And I've been going back and forth between Witcher 3 and Animal Crossing. So I'm just like switching back and forth between those. Mm-hmm. More than anything, I've been using this app. If you guys have iPhones, it's called ACNH Exchange. Looks like you can't even see that probably. It looks like this. Okay. And people set up queues not only to sell turnips, but to come visit their islanders that are crafting so you can get DIYs from them. Ooh. Come see Celeste if you need to get a DIY from her or do Shooting Stars. It's free. It's bot free because it's an app and bots can't mess with it or something like they can with Turnip Exchange. Right. You can host events through it. It's got a queuing system. You just pop in, join a line. and you wait, and it'll send you a push notification when it's your turn. It's awesome. I've literally gotten, like, how many times have I been? I've been 27 times since I really started using this app, like, 2 weeks ago, to go get DIYs from people and go see Celeste every day. So I highly recommend, if you are a daily Animal Crossing player, to check out this app, ACNH Exchange. It's free. And go get yourself some DIYs. They're hard to come by.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely downloading that since we're done recording this.
It's awesome.
Sydney has gotten into the Animal Crossing Discord. And she's been learning. Okay, I'll let her know.
I'm in a few, but there's like a specific Animal Crossing Discord that people talk about, but I never see like an invite link for it.
I'll see if that's the one that Sydney's in, but yeah, she's been making a lot of good friends on there and visiting a lot of islands and people visiting her. I just love, like, it seems like the Animal Crossing community is so close knit and kind, because like even she posted on Discord like, hey, I need 10 people to come to my island to help me water my flowers, because if you have like a certain number of different people water your flowers, it's something happens with them.
You're more likely to grow hybrids.
Exactly. Yes, that's it. She's trying to grow hybrids. So without fail, like, people were like, I'd love to come over. And I'm watching your game, just people are randomly watering flowers. I'm like, I love this community so much.
Yeah, aside from like the weird black market side of Animal Crossing, everyone is so nice and helpful. I mean, because I played like New Leaf and I was really active in the Facebook communities and stuff for the game, people were so nice. If you needed stuff and you just posted about it, they would probably be like, oh, I have it. You can come catalog it at my island, or I have the spare. You can have it. I'll just reorder it for myself, all the time. And it was so kind and nice, and they weren't like 99 Nook Miles tickets and your firstborn child to come to my island. So it's really nice when you do come across those subsets of the Animal Crossing community.
Yeah.
It is 10 times bigger now, which, side note, so it has sold over 14 million copies, and it hasn't even been out for 2 months. I feel a sneeze.
Uh-oh.
I think I'm okay. Sorry, I like felt
good. I hate that.
So it sold over 14 million copies worldwide. It's already surpassed the lifetime sales that Nintendo had charted and expected for the game in less than 2 months.
I mean, I would assume world events had a big hand in that.
Yep. So that's huge. And to compare, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, if you guys have never played that amazing game, brilliant game,
so good.
Like the quintessential Zelda game, that came out in 2007 and it sold 17.5 million copies lifetime from then.
2017, you mean?
Yes, 2017. Yeah, that's what I meant. So from 2017 to now on the Switch, it sold 17.5 million copies. Animal Crossing has been out for less than 2 months and it sold over 14 million copies.
That's insane.
So this game is global in the most extreme sense of the word.
Everyone needs to hop on and get their own islands and come visit us.
I wish we could figure out a way, maybe if I can get my capture card to work, if we could like do this and have like an island hosting thing where people can like put a dodo in and come and hang out.
That would be so cool.
If I can get it to work, I will try to figure something out. Maybe we could do that, like a special little thing instead.
That would be so cool. All right, so before we move on to the main attraction, I want to give a shout out to someone in the chat here. Mr. Fulton Mraz says he has an announcement that he is going to be on America's Got Talent season 15 singing on the show.
That's
so
awesome.
Congrats, Fulton. We'll have to keep an eye out on you.
I watched that show all the time with my grandparents when I was a kid, and we would come stay with them at Daytona Beach. So that show is very special to me.
I love it. I feel like the judges and the hosts change every season. Who's up? Who's doing it now? Terry Crews was the host recently, right?
I haven't watched it in such a long time because I don't have cable.
Because I think Nick Cannon moved over to The Masked Singer. He's hosting that. So okay. I think Terry Crews is now the host of AGT.
Terry Crews, Simon, Sofia Vergara, Heidi Klum, and Howie Mandel.
All right. So Simon and Howie seem to be kind of the mainstays.
Yeah. But Terry Crews as a host has such chaotic energy. I love that.
Hello out there to Aiden. I see you in the chat there.
What's up? I don't play Banjo-Kazooie, but my brother does love that franchise.
I when I had the 64, man, I was playing Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie till the day ended. Like, I was a huge fan of the Rare games.
Did you, when they announced Banjo for Smash, did you get to watch that reveal? Did that do something to you? Like, were you freaking out when that happened?
The childhood in me was like so happy. I was like, because I would love to see another game. I would love to see them make a new Banjo-Kazooie, because the humor was so crazy and out there. And I just loved that game to death. And if they could remake the original, that would be so, so cool.
I mean, anything is possible. Right now, Nintendo had a call the other day where they said that their announced slate isn't all of the games that they're putting out this year. That's just first party, though. But anything is possible. I mean, once the world gets back to normal and devs can work outside of their house on games, who knows?
Yeah. All right. Well, without further ado, we've got to jump into our main attraction for this week. And this is a good one, guys. So we have a new Disney Plus original series debuting this month called It's a Dog's Life, and it is hosted by Bill Farmer. If you don't know who Bill Farmer is just by the name, you know his voice. He has been the voice of Goofy and Pluto for almost 30 years now. So he is hosting this new live-action reality show where he goes around the country and sees dogs doing different jobs to help humans. And it's a really cool feel-good show. You get to see some cool things that the dogs are doing. So far, I've seen two episodes, the first two episodes. And they're 30 minutes apiece, and they showcase two dogs each episode. So it moves very quickly, very informative. It premieres May 15th, the first episode, and it's going to be a weekly show. So it's not going to be all at once like Prop Culture was. This will be a weekly drop. And I highly recommend to check it out. So to promote the new show, I was invited into a conference call with a few other outlets around the country to interview Bill Farmer about the show. And so I have the whole call recorded. I got to ask him a couple of questions myself. So you're going to listen to it. You'll hear all the other outlets asking questions. And I'm excited to present this little look inside It's Dog's Life with Bill Farmer, the voice of Goofy.
Hi, Bill. My name's Alex. I write for LaughingPlace.com and love the show.
Thanks.
And I noticed quite a few farmers in the credits. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about working with your family on this special project.
Well, it actually kind of started as kind of just a little idea with my friend and I, Steve Duvall, who was a cameraman for like 30 seasons on the show The Amazing Race. And he invited me to come up to Reno to do a little local piece on an equestrian center where they have like, almost like the old English fox hunts, and people take their horses out for a stretch of the legs and stuff. And they had about 30 walker hounds. And the footage we shot of me hosting just kind of jumped out at us and said, you know, maybe we ought to do a show about dogs. So I talked to my wife, who's directed and produced and was a script supervisor for 20 years. And with her and Steve, we came up with this idea for me as a voice of a dog for a long time, stepping out and doing a show on real-life dogs. And so we just kind of, you know, it's much easier to use someone you live with. They're always available. And so Jennifer and I developed this show along with Steve, and were able to sell it. And we needed a theme song. My son's a composer, an audio engineer, and a professional drummer. And we said, hey, come up with something. He came up with a great title song, and Disney liked it. So, yeah, it is kind of a family affair here with a few other very talented people involved. And it's great. I mean, it really is. It's comfortable. It's fun. And, you know, it's my first time really in front of the camera as a host. And everyone, of course, your family's going to make you at ease. And I could concentrate on the dogs and not worry about how I look. And I let Jennifer worry about that. And it was just a very comfortable production to put together.
Hi, Bill. This is Banks Lee from Attractions Magazine. It's so nice to get to talk to you today.
Oh, thanks. It's a lot of fun.
Now, I absolutely adored the two episodes that we got to see, and I loved how informative and educational and even emotional the show ends up being. What were some things throughout your travels and filming these episodes that you learned and took away from this show?
Well, yeah, my dogs here at my house spend about 90% sleeping, and they don't have a job other than just barking at the mailman and stuff like that. What I found out that dogs are just, you know, not only man's best friend, but man's best working partner, too. The amazing talents that dogs have with their sense of smell and their ability and willingness to help us for a pat on the back or a play with a toy. But just, they're like big bags of love is what I, and with amazing noses and amazing hearing. And just the love that they exude and the willingness for these dogs to help mankind with whatever we put them to the task to do. They do it so willingly for just a little treat or a pat on the head or just because of the love of it.
This is Josh Shepard. Love the show as well. I got to see one of the episodes. And I noticed you doing the voice of Pluto in that one, just briefly. I guess when you perform such an iconic character as Pluto, I know you've been doing that now for decades, as well as Goofy.
Yeah.
Do you think about the legacy of these characters, and do you even take inspiration from those the actors who previously kind of interpreted the character?
Yeah, when I first started doing Goofy's voice, Pinto Colvig, who originated the voice, and also voiced Pluto from time to time, these are the most iconic cartoon characters ever. They, you know, Mickey came out in 1928. He's still on television every day. There are no other cartoon characters like that, so I'm very well aware of the legacy and the big shoes that I stepped into. The first couple of years of doing it, I was kind of doing an impression of Pinto Colvig, you know, "Oh, the world only you live in," and all the stuff that he had done in the past. After doing it for a couple of years, you kind of got to put a little bit of yourself into the character. And so, yeah, we kind of melded into one weird character. But, yeah, I'm totally aware of the tribute that I hopefully pay to the character itself and also put a little bit of myself in the character and my sensibilities to bring it closer to life.
That's great. Another quick question, if I could. I assume perhaps there was an educational consultant on the show, or maybe it was your own research, but I'm curious if you could share about how you determined the educational takeaways for kids in each episode.
You know, we really didn't have a, quote, educational component to it, other than just our curiosity. I wanted this to be not an educational show, but a fun show that incorporates learning for both adults and kids. And I asked the questions that I wanted to know. And so I just, you know, I tried to satisfy my own curiosity. And that was about it. Of course, we had consultations with Disney Animals on certain things and the facts, get them right for the Pluto's Pointers and the Goofy's Hometown Heroes to make sure that those were accurate. And we had wonderful researchers that searched out a lot of this stuff. But basically, it was just kind of shooting from the hip and learning and asking questions that I just wanted to know. And that kept it more real, I thought.
Hey, again, Bill. Alex from Laughing Place. Another question I had was more about how you found the subjects that you documented, because they seem to be kind of all over the place, different specialties. And kind of following up on that, with Disney Plus going global, it's in Europe and launching in Japan in June, would there be any plans to go international with your travels to document some of these incredible dogs?
Absolutely. We wanted to kind of keep it close to home to see how the show kind of shook out. But definitely we'd love to go international, and if there's a second season, we certainly would plan to, depending on how easy it is to travel in the future and all of those other kind of considerations we have to take. But we just kind of kept it local for most of it, although it was the entire United States that we did. We did 11 states in about 4 months of traveling. But it'd be fun to go to Great Britain and do a Scotty in Scotland, a Irish setter in Ireland, all the dogs over there. There's wonderful stories that we've heard about around the world. And we're even starting to look at stories for season two if they want it. And, one that they're studying, dogs that can smell coronavirus. That would be a very useful talent if we can find some dogs that can do that. And dogs are so amazing and can smell skin cancer, malaria, pneumonia, diabetes, blood sugar levels. It's amazing what dogs can do in the medical profession. So maybe they can help us out with all this corona stuff, too.
Hi, Bill. It's Lou Mangiello from WW Radio. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Lou.
Good. First things first, congratulations on the show. Really excited to see all of the episodes. You know, one of the things that makes Disney such fantastic storytellers is that they're able to elicit such emotional responses, whether they make us laugh or they make us cry. And certainly throughout the series, there's going to be some laughs. And I think there's going to be some touching moments when you look at things like the companion dogs as well. Can you talk about the emotional aspect of It's a Dog's Life?
Well, you're absolutely right that Disney's great at that kind of storytelling. And, of course, as Goofy and Pluto and all of the other, we've had to go through, I've been involved with Disney since 1987. And so I kind of get them. And I think that helped us in putting this show together. There really wasn't much direction from Disney in our initial shooting other than, notes on the footage that we shot. And they helped mold and say, oh, you ought to do this, or you know. But it's really our vision that we put into the show. And, the stories just kind of came out. They weren't – we just went for stories that we thought would be interesting. And we didn't think, oh, this is going to be a tearjerker, or this is really interesting. And we didn't know the dogs until we got there. So it was a big surprise to us, but it did. It ran the entire gamut because dogs are just a bag of emotions, really. I mean, they're just, who doesn't like dogs and who doesn't like cartoons and Goofy and Pluto? And we thought we had a winning formula, and I hope we do.
Hi, Bill. This is Felix from Puerto Rico.
Hi.
I have a question. I was wondering how the voice suffers over time and how you do you adapt? How do you prepare your voice, and what kind of vocal exercise do you have to do to make the character stay current?
Yeah, well, like the first couple of years of doing Goofy, it was kind of like an impression, and I was just trying to do the voice. And still to this day, I am on like 3 or 4 series right now, so I kind of keep those muscles in tone. It's like jogging in a way. If you lay off a jogging and you're really in shape about a couple of weeks and you go running again, you say, what happened? How'd I get out of shape that fast? Your voice is kind of like that. And so I'm always practicing. And, of course, I have cartoons all the time. So, of course, Goofy's always with me. He's kind of like a secondary character in my head. Other characters I have to study more and play back to tape. And, now I nailed it. But with Goofy, he's such a malleable character, we can kind of add emotions to him, and it seems to work with his character. Luckily, he's a very malleable and shapeable kind of character, and that makes it a little bit easier.
Hi, Bill. This is Shannon McGrew from Nightmares
Hi.
Wanderings. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good.
I just wanted to know, what were some of the challenges you faced in bringing this series to life, especially working with animals?
Mostly it was the biggest challenge, I think, was staying warm. About everywhere we went, it was over the winter, and it was cold when we were doing the pet detective dogs. It was like 24 degrees. They buried me in the snow in Telluride, Colorado for avalanche dogs. Staying warm was probably one of the biggest things. And also we were at 14,000 feet on the top of a mountain, so just not getting out of breath was a challenge. Physically, it wasn't too bad generally, but the physicality of it was a little more than I had imagined, just being used to the last 30 years going into a studio and talking into a microphone and going home. But all the other details that go into a live show that I wasn't that aware of, it kept us on our feet, and it is tiring after a while. We did 11 states in 4 months, and that was a lot of travel that I wasn't used to. So, it's a good workout for me.
Hey, Bill, it's Jordan with Disney Examiner. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Yeah, good to hear from you. I was wondering, I know it's probably a difficult question to ask, but did you have a favorite dog in season one that you loved, either in the episodes that we saw already or ones to come that we should be looking forward to?
There's some you just, you gravitate toward, too. One of my favorites that I loved was in our whale poop story, the little girl dog Eva, who was a Jack Russell pit bull mix. What the sweetest dog. Also with Lark and Logan, he was a boy who has a service dog that helps him pick up things, and he wants to be a voice actor, and so we talked about it, that. But that dog was, a golden retriever? No, it wasn't a golden retriever. It was a lab. Yeah, golden lab. And what the sweetest dog you've ever met. So some you just fall in love with. But they all have personalities. They're like people. That's why we tried to go for, it wasn't that border collies do this, but this border collie does this. All of them are different. They all have personalities, just like people. And it's like meeting friends. You get to like some more than others, and you gravitate towards certain dogs or people. And they're just like little people in fur. And it was a delightful thing to get to meet and know a lot of them.
Hey, Bill, thanks again from Attractions Magazine. I started to notice a bit of a pattern in these two episodes where it seems at least once an episode you're getting licked in the face by a dog.
Yeah, they do like to lick me.
Uh-huh. I'm wondering, kind of going off the last question, growing up, what were some of your favorite breeds of dogs, and did any of those thoughts change after meeting all these different dogs throughout the show?
Oh, yeah. I've had dogs for most of my life. We had a dachshund when I was growing up for like 14 years. Probably my favorite dog, and it's kind of interesting to note that my wife was phobic around dogs when we got married. She wouldn't be in the same room with a dog. She always felt they were out to get her, and they were going to bite her and everything. Well, we got a little a Cocker Spaniel, King Charles Cavalier mix. Was our first dog together, and she fell in love with it, and now she's raising, pit bulls here at the house. So we have a pit bull black lab mix named Boo, who's just a sweetie, and you just get to know them as individuals. They all have the different breeds are great. I kind of tend toward larger dogs personally. I've had a golden retriever, and that was one of the best dogs I ever had. But they're all individuals. Some like the tennis ball. Some don't. Some like to sleep more than others. Some are barkers. Some aren't. They're all individuals. And so it's that individual that you have to find and fall in love with.
You probably have an extensive knowledge, of course, of where Goofy and where Pluto have appeared.
Yeah.
You know, in the case of Goofy, the films, the 51 shorts, many TV specials, etc. Fans, of course, I'm sure many of these diehards who are on here, we're all hoping for more of the legacy content to arrive on Disney Plus. One who sort of represents Goofy's legacy in the flesh, are those the kind of conversations that you've had to say, hey, let's get more of these classic shorts on there?
Since about 2006, when Mickey Mouse Clubhouse aired, there hadn't been a week that I haven't done a new cartoon or some event. And I've done probably between 3,000 and 4,000 jobs for Disney over the last 30 years. They're always coming up with more. I'm in like 3 or 4 series right now. And these are interesting characters because they're kind of evergreen. They've never gone out of style. They just work. Mickey started talking with Walt back in 1928. And, they're still on TV every day. They're just unusually amazing characters that I guess it's just, it'll keep going forever. And I'm just so thankful that I got a chance to kind of fill some shoes for a while. I love doing the characters, and now it's fun learning about real dogs.
Hi, Bill. I loved the two episodes of the show that I've seen so far. I'm a huge dog lover, so.
Oh, which ones did right you up. See? I'm curious.
We saw the ones with whale poop and the shepherding dogs.
Yes.
And then we saw the one with the cheetah at the Cincinnati Zoo.
Oh,
yeah.
I love that one. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're great. And you're working a lot with highly trained dogs. But even so, they're animals, and they are, like you say, like people. They may be temperamental. Did you have any situations where the dog just wouldn't do what you wanted, or was behaving, you know, misbehaving, things that may have ended on the cutting room floor or outtakes that we haven't seen?
There's really weren't any that they were misbehaving. Sometimes they lose their attention, and but usually a treat works great. It really, I'm doing that with my own dog in training, or a play toy. It's funny, the shepherding dogs, which was in the first episode that we shot. That was the first segment we shot. They don't even use a treat. They don't use rewards at all. The dogs love and are just, it's built in to herd sheep. It's a hunting instinct that they have that's been modified to herd sheep. And it was amazing where they'd tell the dog, go get the three sheep up on the hill, and he knew what to do. He'd go out there in the field, and he'd bring them back. It was absolutely amazing, where other dogs, you know, they get a treat each time they find something in a suitcase or whatever, and then they'll sit and look at their owner and say, okay, I did it. Give me a treat. It's so fascinating that how they work. An interesting thing is that almost all of the dogs that were working dogs were rescue dogs. I was surprised to find that out. And a lot of the, one of the rescue dogs that we did, the trait that dog had for finding people trapped in rubble under, like, bridges and stuff, if we had a big earthquake, they search for people. Like one of the dogs that they had just barked all the time when he found you, and he'd bark for an hour. Now, that may not be too cool if you have a dog that'll bark for an hour at night. It may be a trait or a habit that the dog does that's not good as a pet, a home pet for some people. But it's great as a rescue dog. A lot of the dogs are very high-energy dogs, which may, if you're a sedentary person, you may not like that too much. But it's perfect for dogs that have to run for hours trying to find people in a collapsed building or whatever. So certain traits that may not be great for a house pet are great for a rescue or a working dog. And that was interesting to find out about.
Hi, Bill. This is Orlando from Puerto Rico.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. People are hungry for family-friendly content now more than ever before. Does being a part of a project like this acquire a new meaning, knowing that you're now also helping thousands of families stay home and provide entertainment for them?
Yeah, you know, with the coronavirus and all of that, we had no idea that was coming. We got really lucky in that we were able to film up until late January, just when all of this stuff was starting. We just kind of slid in under the wire. And I'm just so, you know, thankful that we were able to get all the footage that we needed and to put together a show that I hope that people will like. And it provides some entertainment, much-needed entertainment in these times, as well as some information that, you know, most people may not know about their dogs. And I hope it just lets people know what amazing creatures these are, the dogs are, and how they just, you know, they help us in so many ways. There are dogs now that are being trained to sniff out coronavirus, and I hope they can do that, and because we certainly need that talent. Dogs have a lot of talents that we can use, and they love helping us.
I'm Francisco Canjiano from Puerto Rico, so saludos desde acá. First, I wanted to congratulate you on the show, and secondly, I wanted to thank you for bringing joy to families all around the world with your work now for decades now. So I grew up with you as a Goofy, and now my daughters are growing up with you as Goofy and Pluto, so I want to thank you.
Gosh, that's wonderful.
That's awesome. So, Mr. Farmer, my question was, I don't know if this has been asked before, but I wanted to ask you, are you a pet owner, a dog owner, and what kind of breed? And have you ever talked to them as the voice of Goofy and Pluto? Because that'd be awesome to see or hear.
Yeah, they don't seem to get it when I do Goofy or Pluto. They will react if I do Pluto, and I, whoa, whoa, you know, they'll perk their ears up. But I have a 12-year-old black lab pit bull mix, a rescue dog, and also a Westie terrier mix. Both of them are mixes. Both of them are rescue dogs who I've had, and Roxy's 13, Boo's 12, and, you know, they are part of the family, and they keep me sane during this coronavirus thing, because I go out for about an hour walk every evening, where it's, you know, nice and the streets are deserted, and it's okay to go out. And they keep me sane, you know, because you got to do something, and they're there to help, and they're there to provide love, and it sure comes in handy when you're stuck at home.
Bill, if you wanted to say any last remarks, feel free, but I think we're wrapping it up.
Well, I just want to say that thanks for making this such a fun interview. I mean, it's kind of bizarre to do it over the phone rather than face-to-face, which we'd all like to do, but in these weird times, you got to do what you got to do. And I'm so thankful that you seem to like the show, and I'm certainly hoping that the public will. And, of course, it comes on the 15th. And, hey, I hope that we did 10 episodes, 20 stories on different dogs. And I'd love to do a second season, and we got a lot of ideas and places we'd like to go internationally as well as domestically. We got about 50 stories that we'd like to follow up on that we just were kind of brainstorming and came up with those very easily. So there are a lot of stories out there, a lot of interesting dogs. And, hey, if it entertains and enlightens a little bit, then it makes me a happy guy.
Bill Farmer, he is a Disney legend. He was inducted as a Disney legend years and years ago. I've gotten to meet him once in person at my first D23 Expo back in 2013. He is such a sweetheart, such a great guy. You can tell just how much he loves being Goofy.
I can't wait to watch the show and to listen to your interview. I haven't listened to it yet. But I love the concept of celebrating dogs with jobs. That's just so cute.
It really is wonderful. Like, there's one episode that showcases a dog who is best friends with a cheetah at the Cincinnati Zoo. So, like, the dog as a puppy is introduced to the cheetah when it's a cub, and they become best friends, and it helps with the development of the cheetah. And just seeing them, like, this full-grown adult cheetah play fighting with this full-grown adult dog is just the cutest thing.
I can't wait. And all the hugs and the kisses. I just love dogs.
And I mentioned it in the interview, but at least once every episode, Bill Farmer is getting licked in the face by a dog, which...
As it should be.
As it should be. I think one of my favorite parts is he does, because he's also the voice of Pluto, if you didn't know that. He does all the barks and growls for Pluto. So he starts barking like Pluto, and you can see the dogs like perk up like, what was that?
Is that in the show? You got to watch a couple episodes, so.
Yeah, that's in one of the episodes.
Okay, I can't wait to see this because that's going to be hilarious.
But I'm looking forward to the whole season, so check that out on Disney Plus starting May 15th. It's A Dog's Life. All right, so for right now, we are going to do a little Q&A with our fine patrons of our YouTube live stream. Again, if you want to check us out every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on youtube.com/attractionsmagazine, we live stream the recording of this episode. You get to see behind the scenes and the mess ups and things like that you don't hear in the audio version. So let's go ahead and get right into it. So John Neri just asked, what are your favorite sit down restaurants at Walt Disney World?
Ooh. Good
question.
Do you want to go first or me? If you got okay. Google, or if you got them, go do it.
Okay, so if we're talking, okay, so what's good?
I would say sit down is table service. Like,
you okay, get, I was gonna say,
you're seated.
Buffet, it's Boma, hands down. Boma at Animal Kingdom Lodge, favorite buffet restaurant. Sit down, table service restaurant. Oh my gosh, I'm really gonna have to think about this because. Oh my god. All right. The first one that really comes to my mind is, and it's honestly, it's so weird because it's brand new, but I was so impressed with it. And I went there three times before everything closed down because it was just so good. Regal Eagle Smokehouse at Epcot, yeah. At the American Adventure Pavilion. That was some dang good barbecue. Like, I was very impressed. I'm from Texas. And, like, it reminded me of home a little bit. There's some really good barbecue sauces there that I highly recommend. And it's great to have another quick-service sit-down at Epcot since they got rid of Electric Umbrella. So I maybe it's just because it's brand new, but really that's the first thing that comes to my mind is Regal Eagle. I just love that place.
I really love, and it's funny because we posted a recipe today for one of my favorite dishes, but Kona Cafe at the Poly, listen, their breakfast is delicious, and they have vegan versions of the Mocha Loco and the Tonga Toast. So if you are a plant-based person, that's awesome, because those are really two like quintessential Disney Parks dishes, and sometimes those iconic dishes don't have plant-based alternatives, so very cool. Love that one. And Skipper Canteen is also a fave.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one too. I think what would probably be seconds. It's at Epcot, which weird. How much? Like two of my favorite sit-downs, Garden Grill.
Yeah, I've never been there.
You've never been to Garden Grill.
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's one of those family style dinners where they just bring everything out to you, and it's the restaurant itself slowly rotates in the land pavilion, so you get to see you get to be over some of the scenes from Living with the Land, and you look down into the scenes. It's a character dining, so you get characters as well. It really is just a fun experience.
I think does Hoop-Dee-Doo count?
Ooh.
Does Hoop-Dee-Doo count? Because if it does, then that's on my list too, because that is delicious.
Yes, I'm going to say Hoop-Dee-Doo counts because you are seated, you are being served. And yeah, Hoop-Dee-Doo is, that one's probably my number two, Garden Grill number three, because Hoop-Dee-Doo is just a dang good time.
I went for the first time. It was right before Josh and I moved. Two of our really good friends from Orlando took us out as like a farewell dinner to Hoop-Dee-Doo. And it was both of our first times. And our waiter like messed with us and gave us such a hard time, which is what we love. And the food was so good. I think he force fed our friend like extra portions of food because he was being a smart aleck about it. But man, it was so much fun. The food was so good. And the music is just amazing.
It's a wonderful show. The performers in that show are wonderful. And Kat is correct. Hoop is life. Hoop is love.
Definitely going to go back next time we're in Orlando when it is safe, because that is a very tightly packed dinner show.
Oh, yeah. Kat actually has a good question here. Dream Disney merchandise you would love to see Disney World create?
Okay. Whoever does the merchandising for Tokyo, do that. Like,
thank you.
Themed accessories, themed masks, the patterned collage shirts. You know what I'm talking about?
With, yep.
Like, characters. Mm-hmm. I know Cakeworthy does it in the U.S., but like, I want Disney to do it.
They need to bring, especially now, they need to bring the hand soap pump that pumps out the Mickey shaped.
And bring over the Duffy and Friends stuff. We used to have it, and he didn't really like take off over here like he did in Hawaii and overseas. But like, I bought a Gelatoni bag off of someone on the internet because I wanted one. The plush, stuff like that. Even the little keychains, the little stuffed keychain guy that look really nice. Like, not the kind of crappy ones that they have now, but like the really nice, like miniature stuffed plush keychains. Those.
Yes. For me, we need more merchandise for this ride. this ride needs some more merchandise. This is always my dream, is get more tower-centric merchandise. Because this guy. Speaking of which, Vamp for a second, Brittany, because now that you mentioned Tokyo, Vamp.
Yes. Okay. Tokyo, they were supposed to open a new land in their Fantasyland area, Beauty and the Beast, with an incredible ride. There are parts of it in the Imagineering story. I really want to go. I've never been to Tokyo before, but that got postponed. I guess Tokyo is still closed until further notice. But that's going to have some killer merch. I know that they had little rice balls with Belle on them that they had already like posted pictures of, but the park is closed. But they look super cute. And I know we talked about maybe going to cover it. Who knows when that'll happen. Maybe if we're lucky, that and Super Nintendo will happen at the same time. And then we can just like cover both.
I think we should do this. Okay, so speaking of Tokyo merch, speaking of Tower merch.
Shiriki Utodo!
I want more Tower merchandise from Tokyo. I have a few things, thanks to my friend Rob, who's been out there a few times, and even Matt got me a couple things when he went out. But I need more Shiriki Utodo merchandise.
Listen, if I get to go to Tokyo, I'm gonna have to, like, I'll take my carry-on with my clothes, and then I'm gonna check a full-size suitcase just for merch to bring.
I mean, you have to. That's a requirement, I think.
Because, like, not only the parks, but, like, Japan has such a consumerist, like, merchandise-y culture, like Super Potato, the game store, and all the stuff on Harajuku and everything. I'd be buying so much stuff. It's not even funny.
All right. Well, thanks, guys, for the questions. It is now time to wrap things up for this week. So, Brittany, where can everyone find you on the interwebs?
You can find me at Brittany Tuttle. That's BRITTANITUTTLE. Yes, it's spelled funny, on Twitter and Instagram. And occasionally, when my stuff works, at twitch.tv/BrittPlays3Ts. I still haven't done anything with it. I've honestly felt kind of too lethargic with the quarantine to really mess with it. But we'll get there. Eventually.
Sorry, I'm playing with Shrieky now.
Hold on. Here, let me. I have so many friends with me.
Hey, it's Detective Pikachu.
It's so large. Look at it. It's knee big. I also have Roxas on my desk.
See, for those listening to the audio version, these are the fun things that you're missing with the video version.
And then I have a fossil.
Josh, where did you get that?
Josh bought me this. Some guy makes it out of, like, enamel, or not enamel, like, resin.
Is it like a paperweight?
No, it's just like a thing. I guess it could be a paperweight. It's kind of heavy, but it's a fossil. And then the other thing I have is this.
It's a bell.
She has bells. Listen.
All right, real quick, you can find me on Twitter at Banksley, on Instagram at Dizzy Goofball, and then of course all of the Attractions Magazine socials on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and of course attractionsmagazine.com. So like I said, every Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can see our live stream recording the podcast at youtube.com/attractionmagazine. So please come tune in, interact with us, ask some questions, we'll answer yours. And it's always a fun time.
Yeah, we always have a good fun. Sometimes you get to see the BTS stuff and stuff that we don't mean to happen, but that's live TV, baby.
Yeah, it is. All right. Well, until next week, we hope you guys have a great week, a safe week. Stay clean, stay safe, but make sure you get out there and have fun too.
Yeah. Take a walk, take a drive, call your mom.